Good morning and welcome to our podcast. My name is David Pritchard and I'm the head of marketing here at Sintons. I'm joined today by my colleague Tom Wills, who is a partner and the head of the rural estate and agriculture team here at Sintons. And Tom's joined today by his real estate colleague, Lewis McEwen. So we're delighted to welcome him this morning. So our podcast is episode 5. Can't believe we're at episode 5 already of the Rural Roundup with Tom Wills. And Tom and Lewis are going to discuss common land in a rural setting. So without any further ado, Tom is going to start proceedings. Tom, good morning, and over to you.
Good morning, David. Thank you. Common land, it's something that a lot of people will tell you is not as relevant as it perhaps once was. Common land, however, is important. Around about 3% is a stat that I looked at just this morning. Of all land in England is recognised as common land. So actually, it's perhaps more relevant than you do think. It's pertinent, specifically if you're a landowner, because do you want parties, other parties, members of the public, accessing or utilising rights over your land? Now, Lewis is going to talk a lot more about what common land is. However, some examples are, say, towns and village greens, and various rights for access land have been granted in the Countryside and Rights of Way Act 2000, which gave the public real rights to open country such as mountain, moor, heath and down, and they were registered as common land and given as dedicated land for access. Natural England, for example, produced maps and you can see and check which areas are common land, but there are different types of common land it's important to exercise. Common land is pertinent, so we do need to be aware of it. And if you're buying land, you need to be well aware that actually what you're buying is not common land, or if it is, or part of it, that you understand it and what is required. So Lewis, welcome. Can you tell me a bit more about what common land actually is?
Thanks, Tom. Yeah, so as you said, it's been around for quite a while, and it's something historic and something quite niche that doesn't seem to be being explored very often. Now, there's no single definition of actual common land, but it seems to be in a very basic sense that it's land owned by one person, of which another person is entitled to exercise some rights of common over. Now, rights of common can include things such as grazing of animals or allowing, like you said, members of the public rights of access over. It's usually for air recreation. So this would link back to the town greens that you mentioned earlier. Notable example of common land that I can think of, or certainly locally, sorry, would be the town moor here in Newcastle. As if anyone who has visited Newcastle would know that anybody within the public has a right of way to just walk over the land, even when there's animals such as cows and cattle grazing. So that shows how someone would exercise those rights of common and kind of shows what common land is. So like you said, even though it's 3%, which might seem like a fraction of all land in England, it is quite a large scale of land.
Definitely. And I mean, if you're one of those landowners who has those rights over their land, that 3% will probably feel a lot more. I stress that 3% is more of a general figure, and I wouldn't want to verify the accuracy of that, although how could you actually verify such a figure? I think it'd be very difficult to do so. Great. So in terms of common land, how does something perhaps become common land, Lewis?
So essentially, it's something to do with the Commons Act 2006. This is a bit of statute which would register your land or part of land as common land. So you wouldn't just suddenly find out that a land that you own is common land without it being registered first. So it shouldn't be as any surprise or shock if a bit of land is common.
Great, thank you. No, so be aware. And I think a pressing point for landowners is be aware if you get any notices through your door of any potential impending application or registration. And there are also steps that you can perhaps look at, I believe, try and guard your land against common rights being registered against it. We'll probably look a little bit more about that later and cover that off. Great. Lewis, so in terms of the relevance of common land today, perhaps you could tell us a little bit about that and the significance there.
So the best way to illustrate this would be by some recent case law that's happened. So the case of Blackbush Airport Limited and Hampshire County Council certainly springs to mind. This was when a owner of an airport was attempting to deregister some land that was within the airport's area. So Blackbush Airport was in possession of the airport that they were using via a long lease, and some of that airport was registered as common land, and so they were subject to some third party rights. Now, Blackbush Airport wanted to consolidate their rights on their land and try and minimise that sort of potential third-party rights that some other people could exercise over it. They wanted to make sure that the rights that they had on their land was their rights, and they didn't want anybody to be able to use it for any other purposes. So what they did was they applied to deregister part of the land that was on the outskirts of the actual airport. So for illustrative purposes, the terminal building, for example, could be the hub, and then the hangars and the runways and the outbuildings all dotted around the rest of the airport could count as the curtilage, so the excess of the land. And what the Blackbush Airport wanted to do was to deregister some of that curtilage. So some of the land on the outskirts from the terminal building were currently registered as common land, and they wanted to basically remove that. So the significance of this was that the Court of Appeal upheld the original High Court decision that the airport's operational land was not within the curtilage of the building for the purposes of the Commons Act 2006. So essentially, the airport couldn't just deregister common land that was on the outside, even though it was sort of connected to the terminal building and the main hub of the land. The Court of Appeal found that the airfield, like I said, was not within the curtilage of the terminal building. And so it meant that for the application to deregister the common land, for it to be approved at least, must have always been and must still be within the curtilage of the building. So it seems like the Court of Appeal took a very direct approach to this judgment, in that because the land that they were attempting to deregister as common land was so far away from the terminal building, or at least was not exactly adjacent to it, that it must still remain as common land.
So I suppose in essence, it shows a number of things, that it's difficult to actually deregister common land once it has become common land, and also the definition could be quite wide.
Yes, I think you're perfectly right in saying that. Certainly from this case, it seems that even though the airport thought they would be able to have a strong case on this because the land they were attempting to deregister still counted as their airport, the Court of Appeal took a different approach.
So even with those arguable security issues as well, it was, which I know were a factor in this case, that's something that the Court of Appeal weren't prepared to throw out. They looked at the land in the merit and said, well, actually, some of it is going to remain as common land. Am I right in my assumption there, Lewis?
Yes, that would be correct.
One of the key tests I know is that for land to be classified as common land, obviously there needs to be an application, but at the same time, it needs to essentially be utilised by other members of the public without permission, secrecy or force. So those are some of the tests. Therefore, it's important that we make sure that anybody who is using our land where we haven't consented to it, or perhaps don't have documents, that we actually try to put something in place to protect against that. A typical example, maybe you own some land and maybe dog walkers walking across, there might be people exercising rights across it. If there's no formal rights of way in place at the moment, and they haven't been doing it for such a long period, we should perhaps take steps to preserve the status. And there are landowner statements that can be used. That's something that we can look at more for you if that's something that would assist, which protect your land. In addition, if you're buying land, perhaps for development, you need to make sure that members of the public aren't actually exercising rights over it, may have accrued common rights, which might have an impact upon you pursuing a development opportunity, because that development opportunity would impact upon those common rights. Just thinking, Lewis, as well, anything further in terms of how common land or a finding of your land being common land could actually affect you or our clients?
Yeah, so the main thing I think I wanted to get across, and at least by looking at this case law of the Blackbush Airport, was that even though obviously not everyone is going to be an airport owner or large amounts of land, however, I think what the case does do is perfectly illustrate the importance of understanding what rights your land has, whether that's land that you currently own or land that you intend to own in the future. However, what I think the case does do is perfectly illustrate the importance of understanding what your rights on your land do. So whether that be land that you currently own or land that you intend to own in the future, it's important to know what sort of rights that land comes with. So not only what rights it gives you, but also what rights it potentially gives other people. I imagine sometimes that the rights that your land gives other people is more important for you to understand. Like you said, Tom, with the illustration where a dog walker might be using, it shouldn't come as a shock if someone was to walk a dog there. And if that is something that you're against, it would be something that you'd look into before any sort of purchase. So it's important to do that sort of correct due diligence when buying land, for example, so that you understand the rights that are embedded with land.
Thanks, Lewis. That, I think, is a real key message. And it goes back to everything we try to relay to our clients and potential clients. If you're looking at buying something, please do your due diligence correctly. If you're looking at taking a lease, do your due diligence. You don't want to find that there's something there that actually impacts upon the use or your potential future use or plans. Do your due diligence properly. Take proper advice, not just from solicitors, also from land agents, accountants if necessary. Use the full spectrum of tools available to you. It's important. Please do speak to us early. If you've got any concerns about potential common rights over your land at the moment, there are steps that you can potentially look at taking, such as making landowner statements that would stop such rights accruing if they haven't already been registered. Please do look at it. Don't forget about common land. It isn't as archaic as we think it is. It's old. It's based in history, as a lot of English law is. Yes, it's not as common, no pun intended, as everything else or a number of other facets of English law and property law, but it's important that we deal with it and understand it so that we can protect your rights and your future and your land going forward, not just for now, but for the next generation. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, both. Just very quickly for me, we release our webinars, podcasts and blogs on a regular basis, all of which can be found on our website, www.sintons.co.uk, should you wish to take a look. And this involves all previous issues of this podcast series. You can also follow the Rural team on Twitter at Sintons Rural. Very quickly, contact details, as I do each time. If you'd like to discuss anything Tom or Lewis have raised today further, please don't hesitate to get in touch. Tom can be contacted via telephone 0191 226 7878 or via email tom.wills@sintons.co.uk. Episode 6 will be with you in about 10 to 14 days. And just on behalf of Tom and I, can we just thank you once again for the amount of people that are tuning into these sessions, for the questions that people are sending in for us to ask, which we will hopefully deal with in future podcasts. We're generally pleased that the series is adding value to you. And while it continues to do so, we will continue to record them and bring them to you. So thanks once again for that. We don't take it for granted. All that's left to say, stay safe, everyone. And we'll see you in a couple of weeks for episode 6. Thank you.